Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Thank you for listening to AFR. Big things happening in our country and with this new administration, the Trump administration. We've been talking about that. Neil Gorsuch, the judge from Colorado, had his hearings. Walker, his hearings over? Is he still?
I believe this should be the final day. Either yesterday or today should be the final day.
My understanding was this was going to be the final day, wasn't it?
Yesterday they heard from Neil Gorsuch. Today they're hearing from witnesses, character witnesses, for and against him.
But this will be the last day of the hearing?
This should be the last day of the hearing.
Those voices are Steve Jordahl. Good morning, Steve.
Oh, hello. Yes.
From OneNewsNow.com and American Family Radio News. And Abbott Tagliano, Walker Wildman, yours truly, Tim Wildman. You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues. Check out our Facebook page, Today's Issues, and we live video and audio stream there. And you can comment on the program as well. You got a found a good comment on there that you want
to? I'll have to look. All right, but look. I do have one thing I want to say. Speaking of Judge Neil Gorsuch, American Family Association sent an email action alert this morning, equipping you to tell your senator to approve or to vote yes on Judge Neil Gorsuch for the Supreme Court.
And it's an easy way to do that.
So you can go to afa.net. That's afa.net, right there on the front page. There's an action alert link, and you can click there and find out more information.
This is, you know, folks, if you don't let your congressmen and senators hear from you, your feelings don't count. Okay? Now, I'm not saying you have to weigh in on every single issue every day in the Congress, but there are certain big issues that you need to weigh in on. You know, that's the reason we have a representative government, so you don't have to call every day and tell your congressman how you want them to vote. Mm-hmm. You should have enough trust in those that you elect to have good judgment to do the right thing most of the time. But we all know that political pressures, being what they are, cause good men to do bad things sometimes. But in this case, we need to see this judge confirmed as a Supreme Court justice to replace Antonin Scalia. So American Family Association has endorsed Neil Gorsuch and AFR, and we're asking our folks to contact their two United States senators and say vote yes to confirm. And you're saying an easy way to do that, Walker, is that this action alert that we send out once or twice a week via email.
Yeah.
We don't fundraise off of it. We don't ask people to do anything. It's all relative to our work here and the causes that we stand for. And so you're going to – well, we do – let me just say, we do occasionally, you know, in a very small way, request people send us donations. But that, you don't have to pay for this thing is what I'm saying. We send this out anyway. So how do they go and sign up for that?
They can go to afa.net. That's afa.net. Right there on the front page, you'll see the action alert. Click on it, and we provide all different ways for you to take action.
Steve, what happened in London yesterday?
Oh, wow. We had a terrorist attack in London. I think it happened after we came off the air. At least we found out. I don't remember if we talked much about it yesterday.
It was going on while we were on the air.
So a gentleman, if you can call him that, a man, rented a car in Manchester, England, drove it to London, drove up on the Winchester Bridge. I think that's what they're called. That's the name of it. It's escaping me right now.
It's by the Parliament. It's by the Parliament
Winchester
in
Bridge.
London.
It's the one right in front of Big Ben.
Westminster, yeah.
Right. And he mowed down a bunch of people, hurt a bunch of people, killed some people there, got out with a knife, stabbed a policeman to death, and attacked some other people, and then was shot down dead. Since yesterday, what has happened is ISIS has gone ahead and claimed responsibility, saying he was acting on their behalf, although they didn't suggest that they sent him over from, he was born in England, but he was radicalized in England. And London police today, in fact, just moments ago, named this man as Khalid Massoud. He's 52 years old. He has a long criminal history, but no terrorism connections to date, other than they knew that they had him under surveillance for being radicalized, I guess. He had been living recently around Birmingham, England. Where the vehicle used in the attack was rented, the police released a few other details about him. My understanding is Birmingham is a large Muslim population there, and that he came from there does not surprise the British police, it doesn't sound like.
Well, when this broke, the news broke yesterday, we all knew what it was. Am I right?
Yeah.
You had what it normally is, that is an Islamic jihadist killing infidels so Allah can be pleased and he can die a martyr and go to be with the 70 virgins. That's what happened yesterday. That's what always happens. Not always. That's what happens 9 times out of 10 when these stories break. We learn, you know, nobody yesterday said, wow, I wonder if it's a Baptist or a Muslim. I just don't know. Could go either way. Mm-hmm. No, nobody said that. We all knew what it was. We were waiting for confirmation.
Right.
I saw the guy dead on the street yesterday that he had the Muslim beard, mm-hmm. like most all of them do.
Right.
You know, where they have the beard.
Mm-hmm.
And then that is a show of loyalty and commitment and devotion among the Muslims.
It's part of their religious garb. They don't shave.
Right. The more devout they are, the more dangerous they are.
Yeah,
is what we're learning
to this brand of Islam, which is not an inconsequential brand. It's the brand of Islam. It is the Shia. Are the ones that are the radical ones, and they have control of several governments. And they have armies at their disposal. Gun-toting, uniformed armies, as well as an army of terrorists that go about doing these things.
How do you stop a car, though?
Well,
I don't see how you. The only way to prevent this from happening is prevent these people from ever getting to your country in the first place,
yeah.
If you can.
Well, he was born there.
That's not all together. Yeah. That's not all. You could have somebody. Who you have, I don't know what the San Bernardino, I'm forgetting what that fellow was.
No, they were refugees.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, but you can do what you can do. And I think this helps President Trump's case that he made to the American people when he was elected. And this was a big issue he was elected on. And that is keeping our country safe by preventing the jihadists from coming into the U.S. in the first place. Extreme betting.
Although I'll say it doesn't, he doesn't really need help with the American people. I think they're on board with what he was saying during the campaign. He can't seem to get much help from federal judges. That seems to be the only the only obstacle.
Well, he needs
to fight this, right?
If he doesn't, the Constitution is and the office of the presidency is greatly weakened. I don't see how you can't fight that. Well, he will fight this.
He is fighting it. He's appealing it. And
if he loses, you got to impeach the judge.
Right.
Walker wrote about this a few days ago. Mm-hmm. This is a constitutional crisis moment. Mm-hmm. If President Trump loses this in court, and the court says no, judges determine who comes in and out of this country, not the president. That's what the ruling will, in essence, be.
Right.
I have one correction on my statement about where the San Bernardino attacker was from. He was born in Chicago, Illinois. His family was from Pakistan. They immigrated from Pakistan. His wife, of which helped him carry out the attack, was a foreigner who came here on a marriage visa or a marriage.
Noor was her name, N-O-O-R.
Yeah, so she was an immigrant, but he was technically born in the U.S.
I think there's a lesson everything that you're saying about the immigration laws and the judges is absolutely correct. It is within the president's purview, and he is doing this so that he can have some measure of control who comes over here. But I think if on another level, we need to step back, and I think Israel is maybe a good case study of what a democracy does when you have the constant threat of terror within your midst and on your borders. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the way that Israeli society is, they have found a balance. They have outdoor markets. They have a lot of places in public. It's a free society. They don't round people up and put them in
They
gulags.
Also have a big wall that keeps the...
they do have a wall, yeah. And they have mandatory military service for all of their people. It's a draft, and you have to serve a couple of years, so everybody's invested in this battle.
Yeah.
And I think eventually we're going to have to figure out, because you're right, Tim, when you asked how do you stop a truck on a bridge, really you can't unless you just ban all trucks.
Right.
You know,
mm-hmm.
That particular bridge you might be able to put concrete barriers and not let anybody in, but they just choose another bridge.
Right.
So there's a way that you have to figure out and live as a society with this threat. And I think Israel has found a way to do that. And I think eventually we're going to have to go take a look at what they're doing and seeing if that's not going to become maybe a little bit more of what our norm needs to be.
I will say this, though, too. One other thing that Israel does that we don't, and I'm not sure we have the stomach for, is all these terrorist groups know if they launch a terror attack in Israel, their families' houses are going to get bombed. I mean, we
bulldozed.
What I'm saying is that's the kind of life and death struggle that Israel lives in every day, and that's the kind of battle they fight. So I know when Yasser Arafat was around with the PLO, they knew an attack mm-hmm. in Israel meant one of you guys yeah. is going to get a Tomahawk cruise missile, whatever variation.
Oh, you're saying
they
if they're in another country?
They're in another country.
Yeah.
So that's the United States has not gotten to that place yet. Israel mm-hmm. does it because it's their own survival at stake.
Right.
But that's another thing they do.
I think you're right. What you're speaking to, Ed, is the fact that Israel understands that what the enemy understands is power.
Right.
It doesn't understand we need to build them schools and we need to help improve their infrastructure and make them happy in their land. They only understand, are you strong? Can you hurt me? Or am I strong? Can I hurt you? And right. That's just the way they
do it. We've been talking about these Islamic jihadi attacks in Europe now for what, 3, 4, 5 years or so? Yeah. And I mentioned a couple of years ago, and I'm no prophet on this, it's one of those, duh, really, Tim? You came to that conclusion? this is going to be a way of life for Europe from now till all of us die.
Mm-hmm.
This is not going to change.
There's a struggle going on now, Tim, in Europe, though, and they're at a tipping point. There's a lot, these immigration policies that Germany has put in place, and we're seeing in some of the Nordic countries where these immigrants come in wholesale. All of them are not terrorists, but some of them coming in are.
I think they're all terrorists, Steve. I think we need to be clear. All the immigrants that have come into Europe are terrorists.
This is tongue-in-cheek.
Okay.
The people listening can't see his face. I've been sitting next to Tim Wildman for 21 years, and I thought, all right, I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop because there's...
Well, here's what they do have in common.
I just don't know... I love you, brother, but I don't know why we have to say that.
Well, it's true.
Not every.
No, you're right.
You really have to say
you're right.
Everybody.
You're right.
Because nobody says
you're absolutely
that.
Right.
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 But here's what they have in common. They do not want to assimilate. So when President Trump says we want people who come into this country to love our country,
right.
to learn to love our culture, love our ways, and become us, that means they learn to speak English.
Right.
There's nothing wrong if your religion says that you need to wear a scarf, a headscarf or something. That's okay. I mean, I'm not saying that they have to necessarily all wear Levi's and button downs, but assimilating means that they are rejecting the culture that they came from and adopting an American culture, which is tolerant of other views.
Right. There's nothing wrong with saying that. I mean, these are people who are not citizens who'd like to come to. It's just like if I invite you to, you knock on the door, I open the door, I decide whether I want to let you into my house.
Right.
And if you come into my house and you start doing X, Y, or Z, I'm going to ask you to leave.
Yeah.
So I'm going to tell you on the front end, okay? The dog has to stay outside that you brought. You're not coming to my house with that dog. I got enough dogs of my own.
And
so I'm saying there's nothing wrong with doing exactly like you said, but we have forgotten that is what we used to do mm-hmm. with immigrants. We said, listen, you want to come and be a part of America? You can. That's why I've mentioned numerous times. My mom's family came from Greece. The part of Lowell, Massachusetts, where I would go visit my grandmother and my aunts and uncles and my cousins and stuff like that, you'd hear Greek when you went into stores. You'd hear Greek music coming out of the windows. I didn't mind. I not only didn't mind it, I liked it. We're not saying you can't have your cultural enclaves. Mm-hmm. I'd love going to the north end of Boston where all the Italians lived and you had good restaurants. That kind of diversity is good. But every one of those families came to this country with the idea that they were going to be Americans.
Yeah.
They're Americans now.
And,
right?
And one interesting, one thing we need to point out is that Islam, hardcore Islam, is very oppressive. You go over there to the Middle East, they're very oppressive. Women don't have any rights. They stay at home. They can't drive. They can't have their own job. They can't, you know, go to the movies like you do in America. And so Islam, unlike other cultures, has an overtly oppressive culture that comes along with it if you truly follow the tenets of their faith. And so that's important to point that out. It's not as if Latin Americans can't bring their Mexican music and their food up to North America. This is a whole different animal when it comes to what their culture brings into ours. And I think that's why there's such trouble with their culture assimilating with ours.
Just Mexico is a part of North America, by the way. But I get your point.
Well,
to the U.S. Yeah, Central. You're right.
Yeah,
you're
Central
right.
America.
Central America may also be North America. But that's not point. That's not Walker's overarching point.
Right.
Let me just say this, just to conclude this part of this, is that Europe has surrendered to political correctness. I'm just saying, I don't mean to be pessimistic about this thing. I'm just saying these kinds of there's so many Muslims that have flooded Europe in the last 10, 15 years and that Europe has welcomed in to their countries for various reasons. I don't know all the reasons. But the Muslims are going to change Europe. Probably 50 years from now, they'll be the majority. It'll be a Muslim continent. What I'm saying, but for now, they let these people in, and for every 100 you let in, you got one jihadist. Well, how many jihadists does it take to wreak havoc on a society?
Yeah, one. Yesterday
was one. Yeah.
So you see my point,
right?
This is going to be a way of life. This is normal. This is a one day news story, and next week it'll happen in Berlin. And the week after that, it's Madrid. And the week after that, it's Rome. This is going to happen because the Europeans have let the Muslims in by the millions.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get a certain percentage, it may only be 1%, as I've said, you know, or less. You know, it doesn't take that many to, as I say, to wreak havoc on a society. I was talking to my wife yesterday, Allison, and we love to travel.
It's 10,000, by the way.
10,000.
10,000 is 1% of a million.
Okay. Okay. So if you have a million Muslims come into Europe from
a year,
and 1% of them are jihadis, okay?
That's 10,000.
Wow.
Now, this guy here yesterday, he was being surveilled. Is that right? He was on the radar. Let me mm-hmm. put it that way of the British intelligence
right.
as a potential.
He'd been radicalized,
right?
And they were following.
But that means nothing
that.
Anymore. That's almost laughable. And this is not a laughable subject. But when how many times do we hear? Well, he was being watched and monitored by the
right.
FBI or the M5 or whatever they call it over
MI5.
There. MI5.
That's because Western countries don't arrest you until you do something.
Yeah.
No, I know that.
Unfortunately, when one of these guys decides to do something,
it's too late.
You have yesterday.
Yeah.
You have to. It's too late.
On Westminster Bridge.
Right. It's too late. So it's just something you're going to have to live with in Europe. To bring this home, what President Trump's goal is, and he's inarticulate sometimes about how to go about this, but I'm not taking away anything from President Trump. I'm cheering him on this. I'm just saying sometimes he could say things a little bit better on this issue. But he wants to prevent these people from coming to America and doing the kinds of things we see happening in Europe in the U.S. And when he wants to do this, then the political left says, no, you're anti-Muslim. Well, let me tell you something. You if wanting to prevent Islamic jihadism means you're anti-Muslim, there's no way not to be. Think about what I just said. Islamic jihad and Muslim. All right? So the fact that to my thing, I poked Steve at fun a while ago, not all Muslims are terrorists. That's true, or jihadists. But all the jihadists are Muslims.
Right.
So I don't know how you, if you're going to prevent them from coming, Muslims who are going to commit jihad from coming to America by extreme vetting, by necessity, you're going to have to prevent Muslims from coming to the U.S. So the political left doesn't want to calculate. Calculate's not the right word. They don't put this in their calculations. They don't even consider this. And they want to say President Trump is just creating a Muslim ban, which is not true, by the way. As we know, there are many countries, including Indonesia, who's the largest Muslim country in the world, are not on the list of banned countries. Right. So it's not a Muslim ban.
Right.
But you know what? Constitutionally, he could ban Muslims if he wanted to.
Yeah.
If you read the Constitution on the authority.
We banned communists.
Banned Japanese.
For decades. Right. You were a known communist and you wanted to emigrate to this country.
Nazis too.
We said no.
Or communist. Yeah, we said no. And that was the authority. The president has the authority to do that. So anyway, we were just about out of time. You got anything else, Steve?
Let me just go over. We said that this was the final day for the hearing on Neil Gorsuch.
Right.
And the Democrats have said that they are going to filibuster him. And, in fact, I have this is about a minute. Do we have a minute to play this clip from Mr. Schumer?
I have come to a decision about the current nominee. After careful deliberation, I have concluded that I cannot support Judge Neil Gorsuch's nomination to the Supreme Court. His nomination will have a cloture vote. He will have to earn 60 votes for confirmation. My vote will be no, and I urge my colleagues to do the same. To my Republican friends who think that if Judge Gorsuch fails to reach 60 votes, we ought to change the rules, I say if this nominee cannot earn 60 votes, a bar met by each of President Obama's nominees and George Bush's last two nominees, the answer isn't to change the rules. It's to change the nominee. Yeah.
What a hypocrite.
Yeah.
What a hypocrite. The reason why Obama nominees reached 60 votes is because Republicans, basically, their view has been, You won the election,
right,
Mr. President.
Right.
You get to nominate who you want as long as they are qualified and don't pose a direct threat to the Constitution. We're going to vote for you.
Right.
The interesting thing about this to me is if they are choosing to go ahead with the filibuster on Mr. Gorsuch, it will probably trigger the Republican leadership to throw what is called the nuclear option, which means they no longer need 60 votes to get him through, but they need 51, which they have.
Sign me up for that.
That's done so that the next time, if I loved, you know, the next battle, is that switch is already thrown.
To me, the filibuster rule needs to go altogether.
Yeah, I agree.
It's a majority.
Come on. We live in a country.
Unless it's a real filibuster.
Right.
Where you get up and talk.
And you talk until you can't talk anymore.
Right. They've done that too, by the way.
Like Ted
Cruz did. But that's rarely done anymore. Most of the time they just say filibustering and then they don't have to talk.
Right. Mm-hmm.
They don't have to really filibuster.
We're calling it. Let's go to the House.
Right, right. So this filibuster thing, listen, we vote in this country and then we count up who has the most and you make your arguments. The idea that you need a super majority on all this stuff is just—it's not constitutional.
It's not mandated by the Constitution.
Not mandated by the Constitution, I should say, as Ed just says. Take care, everybody. We'll see you back here tomorrow.